Christianity, which according to old Spanish tradition, was brought into Spain by St. James 4 years after the death of our Lord, made rapid progress in that country and flourished there, mixed up, it is true, with the terrors of Arianism from the invasion of the Goths and Vandals. The veneration of Mary was already common, though somewhat eclipsed by that of St. Vincent, the great martyr of Caesar Augusta, now Saragossa, whom Prudentius had celebrated in his hymns. Our Lady of the Pillar, which was at first, it seems, but a poor chapel, built of clay and round stones, was already a Roman church, frequented by numerous pilgrims, where the statue of the Blessed Virgin seemed to smile on the kneeling Spaniards from the height of her rich marble column. Our Lady of Toledo, the Metropolitan Church of Spain, the foundation of which is referred by some Spanish historians to the first ages of Christianity, was authentically consecrated in the year 630 under the Gothic king Recarado, the first king of Spain, who merited the title of Catholic, since he expelled the Arians from his kingdom after having their errors condemned by a council held in Toledo. But the shrine of Mary most frequented by the Spanish people in those remote ages to which we now refer was that of Our Lady of Covadonga in the Austrias. The reason was that, under the natural arches of this Austrian cave, consecrated to Mary by the ancient hermits when they were waging war against Druidism, in the depths of that Spanish forest where it long maintained itself, the flag of independence, the sacred banner of the cross, had taken refuge, as a last resource after the Battle of Xerix, which delivered Spain to the caliphs. Abandoning forest after forest, mountain after mountain, and retiring with heroic slowness to Mount Atiba, which commands a view of the Cantabrian Sea, the last boundary of Spain, Pelego, a young man of the royal blood, the only hope of his country, found shelter for a short time with a handful of brave followers in this inaccessible cavern, which the piety of the Austrian mountaineers had consecrated to the Blessed Virgin, whose sweet image was placed on a rock that served for an altar. On entering this rude temple, the Spanish hero conceived all sort of hopes, and, kneeling with his companions before the sacred image, he solemnly placed himself and the shattered fortunes of Spain under the protection of Our Lady of Covadonga, took the Virgin's name for his war cry, and fortified himself on her mountain. The Mother of God graciously heard the Gothic prince and was pleased to manifest her protection by giving the Spaniards a great victory over the Moors commanded by the Musulman governor Alcama. Attributing this unhoped-for victory to the Blessed Virgin, Pelego, to show his gratitude, founded near the natural grotto, which was in the side of a steep rock, at whose base flowed the Asuba, a fair church with the title of Our Lady of Covadonga, of the cave, where all Spain went to pray. The descendants of Clovis the Handsome, as he is styled in the introduction to the Salic Law, had sadly degenerated from the valor and prudence of that prince. The lamp of the Merovingians, almost consumed, was wasting away without emitting a single flash of light. The sluggish kings, who were no more than empty shows, were scarcely seen by the people more than once a year, and then they appeared seated on a chariot bedecked with flowers and green branches, drawn by four oxen, who moved with a slow and heavy gait towards the Champ de Mai, there to exhibit to the public gaze those phantoms of princes whom the breath of Charles Martel could destroy if it deigned to do so. Yet they were pious and built monasteries, but piety alone will not suffice to sustain a scepter. That of France is heavy and requires a strong arm, a fearless heart, a clear head, and a prudent mind. The mayors of the palace had all that, happily for Christian Europe, which was soon to be confronted with Islamicism. The Moors, being masters of Spain, had looked with a longing eye from the top of the Pyrenees over the land of France, the fairest kingdom of the West. It seemed to them good to introduce Islamism there and to change its churches into mosques. The project was no sooner conceived than executed. The rich plains of the south were quickly covered with a numerous army, which pillaged the shrines as it passed along, and dashed from their ancient pedestals the statues of the Virgin and the saints, contemptuously treating them as idols. All France quaked with fear. From the Pyrenees to the Rhine, the churches could scarcely contain the multitudes who came to implore the assistance of God and the Blessed Virgin. The bishops took up arms. The mitred abbots marched to battle under the flag of their abbey. The abbot of St. Denis hoisted the Oriflamme, which was then peculiar to his own convent. Aquitaine displayed the image of St. Martel and Charles Martel, the cloak of St. Martin of Tours, which was then the royal standard of France. It was truly a holy war, and we consequently see that those who fell in this contest were numbered amongst the martyrs. The battle wherein the Moorish scimitar and the Frankish battle-axe were to decide the destinies of the world and secure the triumph either of the Quran or the Gospel was fought on the plains. The two armies viewed each other at first with equal surprise. The French could not help admiring the brilliant Eastern cavalry, proud of so many victories and laden with the spoils of Africa and Asia. The ground shook beneath the fiery tread of their Arab corsairs as they impatiently pawed and pranced, seeming as though they would cry, "Forward!" like their type immortalized in the sublime descriptions of Job. The eye was dazzled by the gorgeous flowing robes of the Saracens, the splendor of their jeweled turbans, and the meteor glare of their breastplates and scimitars. The army of the Franks, ranged in angular form for the battle, presented to the sons of Ishmael a sight no less strange or imposing. Those agile warriors, clothed in short garments and exceeding the swiftest horses in the celerity of their movements, that formidable infantry, which united in its maneuvers the ancient tactics of the Roman legions and the wild ferocity of the Germanic races, that bristling triangle of spears and axes, advancing eagerly but steadily to pierce the Moor squadrons, struck the Arabs with surprise, and soon convinced them, say the ancient chronicles, that they had no longer to deal with the degenerate Goths, and that Charles was a different person from Rodriguez. The Battle of Xerxes, which delivered Spain to the Moors, had lasted 8 whole days. The Battle of Tours, which delivered France from them, lasted but a single day. The Arabs charged the Christian army several times, pouring in one battalion after another, like the overwhelming billows of the ocean, but their insatiate fury broke in vain against the solid phalanx of the Franks, whom a Portuguese bishop, Isidore, their contemporary, compares to a wall of ice, against which the Arab host dashed itself to pieces. At length the ferocious Abdurmema, lieutenant of the Caliph of Baghdad, whose authority extended even to Spain, fell under the crushing axe of Charles. The shades of night separated the combatants, and the next day, when the Christian troops rushed on the African camp in order to complete the ruin of their enemies, they found it empty. The Moors had fled. Then, each of the victorious battalions, as they marched into the grateful city, was greeted with the merry sound of bells and the music of joyful anthems, and the whole city resounded with the cry of "Praises be to Christ, who loves the Franks, protects their armies, and watches over their kingdom."